Welcome to BioChat, a podcast by AppColonial Technology. My name is Ken Lung, and with this podcast, we aim to familiarize you with not only AppColonial's contributions to efforts in scientific discovery, but also to highlight the direction of ongoing research and help scientists determine how to best leverage their skills to improve global human health and quality of life. Join me today in welcoming Ms. Trista Smith. She is the Vocational Program Manager at Argonne National Laboratories in Illinois in the Sustainable Transportation and Education and Partnerships Programs. Thank you for joining me today, Ms. Smith. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
So just a very quick background for our audience. Ms. Smith and I are acquainted because I used to teach your son, Michael, in urban Chicago. We had a very cool experience. He was a great kid. I'm glad to see that he's doing well, and I really thank you for giving me the opportunity to catch up with him a couple weekends ago. I always ask my guests this, Ms. Smith. We can start with your background. Basically, why do you love science? How did you get to doing what it is you do now? Because you are, in fact, an engineer.
So I love science because it takes all of the complicated nuances that we've learned about in grammar school, in middle school, in high school, and even in college. And as an engineer, you get to actually see how science is applied in the real world. And I think being an engineer reinforced my love for science. You get to basically play with all that you've learned about, touch all that you've learned about, and find out the realities of all that you've learned about as you become a practitioner of any sort of science in the STEM fields.
That's great. And I note that you are, in fact, an engineer. You know, when I'm going on YouTube and I'm seeing videos by like Mark Rober or the guy from Smarter Every Day who's in Alabama, they're just making these really cool things to like shoot baseballs at Mach 1 or to like make glitter bombs. And I'm just feeling like I used to be a biologist. I still am in principle. I do have the PhD, but I don't really work in a lab anymore. But I feel like when I'm playing with Legos and other things, so when I'm building models, I enjoy working with my hands, and I'm wondering why it was that you chose to go into engineering, because I know why I chose to go into biology instead of engineering, although I do love it. But why did you choose to become an engineer? And actually, what kind of engineer are you?
So I'm a robotics and automation engineer, and I chose to study electrical engineering because basically I thought that I could utilize my academic skills. I was very strong and math and science coming up through grammar school, high school, and even when I started going to college. I was in the military when I started going to college. I was in the United States Army. While in the United States Army, I served as a finance and accounting specialist, although I worked in the office most of the time on financial projects. We went out to the field, and when we went to the field, I set up all of our communications. So there was lots of connecting of wires and other electrical components for that. I also got certified as the nuclear, biological, and chemical defense specialist while I was in. So I got a chance to conduct some cool experiments to make sure that the environment was safe for my battalion to enter. So I really got a chance to see how science is applied. And so during that time, I was actually studying my general courses at a community college at night. And that's when I really decided, you know what, I want to go into engineering. I'm strong in math. I'm strong in science. And I can see myself being able to apply it in the engineering realm. There was a school in Alabama that I wanted to go to. I had kind of had my eyes on this school for a while, Tuskegee University. But I know that they were HBCU, very strongly noted for their platform in engineering. And I decided electrical engineering because, you know, I really enjoyed being the electrical comms person in my unit and setting up all of our electrical communications, all of our power from all of our different tents that we had erected out in the field. That was something that I enjoyed doing, and I wanted to learn more about it. I wanted to learn how things worked as opposed to just being able to connect things together. And so when I went and studied electrical engineering, when I started working my first job at Ford Motor Company, I got a chance to even go deeper into the controls aspects of machinery and equipment and eventually evolve into becoming an expert, an SME, in the robotics and automation side of manufacturing. And so that's how I evolved into my role as a robotics engineer. 15 years ago, I was on the cusp of my engineering career. I had a robotics team like you that played with the Legos. I taught kids how to make robots out of Legos, how to program them on the south side of Chicago. And we competed and we did that. I did that for about 5 years. But I actually brought my kids, my robotics teams, to Argonne for the facility tours because I wanted them to get a chance to see what the future could hold for them in the STEM fields if they chose to go that route. And then I got invited to teach high school while I was, you know, because of my reputation from coaching. I had two grammar schools that I had teams at. So one of the principals said, you should be a teacher. So I actually transitioned. I really love teaching and I did still love engineering, but I love teaching. So I transitioned and became a career and tech ed teacher. I started teaching pre-engineering. And so I thought that was phenomenal. But during that time, I had like a little pet project that I was working on. I actually built a workforce training program plan, and I was sharing it with different community members in Chicago while running my robotics team, while teaching, you know, at the high school level as a career in tech ed, pre-engineering teacher, teaching CAD, teaching the principles of engineering design. And CAD is computer-aided drafting. So I was teaching kids how to draft and how to model and also how to build and the principles around building in engineering design. And so that was the time when you met Michael. When I was able to get some significant funding, I took a leave from the high school position and started a workforce program where I designed a curriculum and launched a factory that made plastic products. But we used that almost as a big lab where we taught underserved community members how to draft. We had a CAD platform for us as a career pathway, and then how to maintain automation. And so we had a maintenance program as well, and a robotics training program as well. So we certified in CAD, we certified in maintenance, and we also certified in robotics at that facility. And we ran that facility. The training center was open from 2015 until 2021. The plastics factory was open from 2017 until 2022. And so we ran that program on the south side of Chicago as a means of creating a vocational training platform. And I had a relationship with Argonne. Naturally, I took my high school students to Argonne. I took my workforce students to Argonne. I started working with Argonne in other aspects, doing research around the M95 manufacturing of the plastic components for the M95 mask, a project that they were working on. I also served on the Chain Reaction Committee as a judge and also a committee member in planning and developing for aspiring STEM inventors. And it was really cool. And so when this position came open, I just thought it was a natural fit because I started a robotics team and kind of grassroots and teaching youngsters about STEM. Then I had a chance to start working with high schoolers. And then I worked with the workforce community and built a workforce system. And then after that, you know, this is the next level. We're building a vocational training platform for the EV and battery workforce industries across the country. So that's the role that I'm working in. I just recently took this role on. And so we're now at the beginning phases, but we have some very promising locations where we'll be launching regional workforce training hubs to service manufacturers in the EV and battery workforce industry, as well as entrepreneurs, training providers, and, you know, helping bridge the gap and create a pipeline into this emerging, highly innovative, science-oriented market.
Sounds great. And if I could clarify, when you're talking about this vocational program, so in my mind, when we first started talking, I thought, hey, maybe we can do some outreach for high school students, but you're going beyond that. You're actually kind of retraining able-bodied workers to get away from the older technologies as we get it more into automation and artificial intelligence. You're helping retrain these workers for skills that they need to drive us towards a more electronic future where we're less reliant on fossil fuels and hopefully more sustainable and clean for the environment. Is that correct?
That is exactly what we are doing. We are trying to build a pipeline that will suit the emerging workforce needs as our emerging DOE, Department of Energy initiatives are realized. And that is to have, I want to say 67% of our vehicles are supposed to be electric vehicles by 2030. in order to do that, there has to be a workforce to support the manufacturing side. And like I said, the entrepreneurs that are installing these EV charging stations and those technicians or tradesmen and women that will be servicing the different technologies out there. So we will be building that workforce and promoting the clean cities and clean energy initiatives of the Department of Energy.
That sounds wonderful. And I do have like a number of questions about electronic vehicles because, of course, I drive one now. There are a number of issues, including the fact that they have yet to get to a national charging standard. I think they're transitioning to Tesla's, I believe it's called NACC standard, where that you see all those Tesla superchargers, but then there are like the CCS chargers, which is what I have. And obviously you're taking like a square peg and trying to put it in a round hole. And so now GM has to send me an adapter. It's really silly. And of course, you've seen the issues about like batteries melting or exploding, catching the car on fire and things like that. But as my point of view is, we do want everybody to go to electric, but at the same time, you got to make it affordable because there's no way right now that an electric car is more affordable than a regular gasoline powered car. And that's unfortunate. Like, that's the reason why even if a person who is, say, less fortunate than I am, they want to transfer to an electric car, they can't because they simply can't afford it. And if they could afford it, they probably can't afford the insurance on top of that. It's really silly. But I do love my electric car. I just kind of wish it would charge 100%. But going back to the education part, in addition to the workforce training, can you speak on the outreach part? Are you still able to help work with the high school students who come to Argonne for tours? Or is that phase of your life kind of over for you now that you're in this role?
So I'm always happy to join any group of youngsters that want to come in on a tour. I was just recently asked by a local church if they could bring a group of girls to be a part of a tour. And I joined the Women in Science and Technologies group. We hosted Introduce Girls to Engineering Day, and I was happy to participate in that. Any and every activity that they have to outreach to youngsters, I'm planning to be a part of that. I'm going to also serve with the veterans group and the Argonne African Americans group as well to kind of reach out and make sure that I'm always available to give back from an internal position in Argonne. As an external position, I am leading a project called Project Green Sky, and it is a electrical aviation project where we are going to be taking an electric airplane on a tour for the next 3 years from San Diego all the way back to Virginia, but all over the country, sharing with youngsters what electric aviation is all about. We have an online learning management system that we'll be engaging youngsters in. We'll be sending simulators out to the groups that participate, and very large scale model airplanes that they'll be building and flying and learning all about the electrification of aerospace. And so that is something that I do with Forgotten Heroes Foundation, which is a non-for-profit organization based out of, I want to say Virginia Beach, but there's another Hampton Roads in Virginia. And so I'll be supporting that project. I actually am the project manager for that project and helping design the curriculum and all of that and deploying and coordinating and collaborating with STEM providers across the country. So that is my give back. I also host the STEM Expo for the HUD STEM Veteran Affinity Group out of Richmond, Virginia. And so I'll be having the Juneteenth event there on June 15th. There will be a host of STEM providers and STEM pioneers to share with youngsters in Henrico County, where we're going to have a drone tent race that will be hosted by the Joint Andrews Air Force Base. We'll have a lot of the federal agencies there, like the Department of Transportation, Department of Energy. There's going to be lots of people out there just sharing with youngsters and encouraging youngsters to be a part of STEM. We're going to have a gaming truck there because we do participate, our STEM pioneers participate in e-gaming tournaments, and also going to have some literary components as well. We have like a comic book group that designs and does the writing or scripting for comic book scenarios. So there's a whole host of different types of STEM providers that I'll be convening to be a part of the Juneteenth event in Henrico County this coming late spring, early summer. So that's kind of my give back. So yeah, answer to your question, I still participate in STEM for K-12. I also encourage workforce development, and I support it wholeheartedly, especially in this role as the vocational program manager.
That's wonderful to hear. And as a former teacher, from my point of view, the issue was never about the effort or the desire. The desire and the effort was always there. The issue is with resources and with the proper background. And that's what I noticed about many of my kids. They really wanted to learn biology or engineering or physics, but they sometimes lacked the fundamental skills because they either weren't, I don't want to say they weren't taught properly, because I'm very sure that the previous teachers tried. I think there was an issue with retention. And I think part of what you're doing is really cool, because you're giving these kids hands-on experience. And that's part of the reason why I think retention is so lacking, is because in a lot of schools, they don't have labs. They don't have practical labs. They don't have kids like, you know, plugging stuff into walls or dissecting animals. We actually did try to do that at the schools that I was teaching at. We would actually promote a lot of practical lab experience. We'd go outside, we'd launch airplanes, we'd throw projectiles, we would do kind of small reactions in chemistry and biology class. So there was a limited amount of exposure to them. But I think giving them access to Legos, even to build and to learn, you know, computer programming, or just giving them something to hold in their hands and to solve a problem with, that is very, very important for a young learner. And so that's why toy design is so important when you're in your formative years as a toddler. Like, you're using your hands to manipulate things. That's super important. And I think the things that you do with both, you know, adult workers and also the children who visit your facility is very important to just give them that experience.
I agree wholeheartedly. I remember my son Michael coming home telling me about all the cool opportunities that you provided as a teacher. Sharing your passion and your knowledge was, I would say, one of the crucial components of motivating him to do well, motivating him to reach a little higher. He is a STEM professional. He's a licensed pilot, and he's moving forward in his career, graduated from college, 4-year university. So I'm very, very excited. Because of your influence, he was able to participate at the Andover Phillips Academy every summer as a student there as well. So you have made a major impact. Those little nuggets that you imparted and those opportunities that you provided was so inspiring for him. So I just want to say thank you as a mother. And that's one of the reasons why I maintain and continue with my work in the STEM field, because I just want to, I want to be that beacon, like so many of us are. You know, I want to continue to be that beacon that might inspire another person, a young person coming along, to move forward and to become a STEM professional in their lives.
It's kind of like a personal point of view for me, but I note that when I taught, it was mostly African-American and Latino students. I looked nothing like them for the most part, but it's important for folks like you who actually participates very strongly in these outreach programs that they see somebody like you or somebody like the astronaut Mae Jemison or someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson, like doing great science and communicating great science. But I also note that like a lot of my students do keep in touch with me because they realized how passionate I was for helping them and for my love for science and trying to give them opportunities to go into science. One of Michael's classmates, I actually was able to search for one of my former mentors, say, hey, do you think you can give us some materials like gloves or Eppendorf tubes or, you know, pipettemen? And when my former mentor left the University of Chicago, he left behind all his equipment and basically said, use this as you will. And so I used it to basically set up a sort of like hands-on practical lab to show kids how to use pipettemen and to try to set up like a fake DNA, you know, electrophoresis experiment and stuff like that. But I think it's important for folks who are out there, especially that professor who helped me get like a bunch of other professors to start sending me equipment to all the schools that I was working at. We got lots of gifts, and I guess they don't have to directly participate, but the fact that they are supportive of this kind of initiative to help kids who otherwise would never see these resources. And in fact, this professor of mine helped one of my students get a summer lab experience where he would actually grow yeast and analyze their progeny and genetics and stuff like that. And it was really a great experience for him because he wanted to become a doctor. And that was, you know, a feather in his cap for the resume. So what I think I'm saying is that it takes an entire village to help the rest of the village, because, you know, the old saying is it takes a village to raise a child. Well, the village can't help itself as a whole, and as a whole we can all improve and have a better quality of life.
Like you said, you may not have quote unquote looked exactly like the kids that you were teaching. I think that helped them, like it helped me. In California was a melting pot, so everybody looked like everybody in my opinion. But after I left California, I realized that the world can be sometimes a little segregated. Having people that don't look like you can also encourage you and help you to feel comfortable when you have to be in environments around people that don't look like you. You being there, maybe being the only person of your background to be around all those Latino and African-American kids in inner city probably helped them to feel more at ease as they embarked on their career journeys. You know, and maybe they were one of the few or one of the only of their racial or their socioeconomic background. And you made them feel more comfortable. So I just want to give you that as well. The village does make a difference.
Absolutely appreciate that. What message do you want to send from Argonne National Labs through your program to the rest of the world?
I'm so inspired. And it is so tangible to be a part of a supercharged STEM environment. There are high school students working on amazing research projects here at Argonne. There are college students, even if they're not on site, they're participating in different challenging projects like the EcoCard Challenge or the Battery Workforce Challenge. As college students, they're participating in these highly STEM supercharging projects. And they are learning and growing and, I mean, really not only becoming SMEs or subject matter experts in certain technologies, they're also preparing themselves for amazing careers. These are people that are not necessarily working for Argonne, but working with Argonne to discover innovation and to launch it for us as a country. So there's opportunities that are beyond what you can even imagine. There's a lot of higher ed, like PhD candidates on campus doing some amazing research here. There are some amazing mentors that have already paved the way and are yet here to motivate and to encourage and inspire and cultivate a higher level of STEM capacity in this country. So Argonne is one of the most exceptional facilities that a person could be a part of. And I'm so honored to be a part of it. My whole goal is to make sure that it's accessible to someone who wouldn't think that they would ever be here. Like I am still in shock that I'm here, but someone who didn't know that this could be a landing spot on their journey. I'm here to inspire them, to let them know that this can be a reality, that working with a national laboratory, being a part of the most amazing and innovative research or technology development is within your reach. And it starts with a strong foundation in grammar school, middle school, and high school, and a lot of hard work and tenacity in your collegiate studies and in positioning yourself in your career to be a valuable team member on one like the one that I'm on now, building the workforce for the whole EV industry. Don't feel that it's without or beyond your reach. It's definitely within your reach.
Yeah, I've actually driven by Argonne a couple of times, but I've never been. My mentor at the University of Chicago had some lab space at Argonne, but for some reason, we just never went. And I'm not entirely sure what was going on with that one, but I'm very glad that you are having a good experience so far. I hope to learn more about your career and the way that you're paving the way for our workforce's future. And I just wanted to thank you very much for your time today in speaking with me about Argonne and the programs and your background.
Thank you for having me. And if you're in town, let me know. I'll definitely bring you on campus. You can come and hang out with me one day.
Yeah, and if there's like a volunteer position or something, like we are eventually planning to move back to Chicago. Like I would love to do it because I was always having this dream that I would be able to help the community or teach or something that will really impact hundreds to thousands of people. And that's something that would be an enormous use of my time. It would be very fruitful for me and rewarding. So thank you very much for that.
Hey, well, I'll definitely keep you in mind. There's some opportunities are always evolving, so I'll definitely keep you in mind.
This has been a conversation with Ms. Trista Smith. She is with Argonne National Laboratory, and we hope you join us again next time when we will explore another exciting topic about bioscience research and careers.
BioChat is a production of Abclonal Technology, hosted and edited by myself, Ken Lund. Please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts and follow us on social media. You can find our various socials in the show notes link to Dr. Beaker's page on appclonal.com. Or you can also find our vast catalog of biological reagents and services. If you wish to contact the podcast directly for an interview opportunity or to inquire about Appclonal's quality products and services, please send a message to service@appclonal.com. Thanks for listening, and we will see you on the next episode.